Let's go back to the book of 1 Peter tonight and stomp on the men a little, huh? One of the things we tried to bring out, yes, that would be nice. Wonder what I did with this. One of the things that we were trying to stress and to emphasize from this passage this morning was that God expects from you as a marriage partner to do what is, the fancy word is counterintuitive, to do what doesn't come naturally, to do what isn't like you. You marry somebody because they're different, and then after you're married a while, you complain about the fact that they're different. It bothers you that they're different, and you know that they're different, and yet somehow you have this idea that without changing, you can move close to one another. This will, don't worry, Mike, you're right in the line of fire, but you know, I'm referring to other people as well as you. One of the things that the Lord really impresses upon you is that I need to think differently if I am going to provide this person with what they need. That part of being married is giving to that person their due. Corinthians uses the phrase due benevolence. It's God put me on the earth for many purposes, but one of my purposes was to give to this person something that only I can provide and something that they couldn't live without. Now, that's not your only purpose in life. You're not defined as a woman by who you're married to, or even as a man by who you're married to. But before you were born, God designed you to meet the needs of and to fill the loss and to fill in the gaps in the life of one person. And you're the only person who could do that. And that is a tremendous privilege, but you don't know how to do that unless you change the way you think. You are not naturally able to do that. And up above, we saw that God expected the women to lay aside those tools, those weapons, if you will, that are their natural gifts, their ability to verbalize, their looks and attractiveness, and those are not the things that God would call them to use to find their place, to find out what God has for them in this marriage. Well, men likewise have to step completely out of their comfort zone in order to meet the needs of the wife. And it says here in verse 7, he begins with the word likewise. Again, all of this stems from back in chapter 2 about submission. Submission is finding why God has put you where he's put you. Finding out where you fit in the pattern. What is my role? This is the time for the NBA Finals. Some of you might care two hoots about that. I kind of enjoy it. When you follow sports at all, you realize that there are two kinds of players on a team. There are the stars and there are the role players. There are the stars who just do everything and people go to the games to see them and they sell the tickets. But the teams are great when you've got the role players, people who are on that team in order to fulfill a special role and to step in. Chicago Bulls had Michael Jordan for a long time, but until they got support for him, they never became champions of the National Basketball Association. They need the people who say, that's your job. Your job is to grab rebounds, tattoo your body, and get fouled out of the game, like Dennis Rodman. Your job is to do this or that. Well, in a marriage, if you don't understand what your role is, what God has uniquely asked you to do in that marriage, some of it has to do in terms of the needs of the household. What's your job in terms of the finances of the household? What's your job in terms of the workload of the household? But in terms of your spouse, you have to ask yourself, what is my job in terms of meeting that person's needs? What are the needs that God has placed in that person that he expects me to meet? And unless you're meeting those needs, you can't be satisfied. You can't have peace because you're not doing what you're supposed to do. You are not fulfilling your God-given role unless you're doing that. And for men, that's a lesson that comes with great difficulty sometimes. Men tend to focus out of the home and tend to look outside the house. And yet this passage makes it very plain that God's responsibility for the husband lies inside the home. Notice, I guess I'll read from the King James. It says in verse 7, "Likewise, you husbands, dwell alongside," the word "them" isn't there, but it means "be a common dweller according to knowledge, giving honor to the wife as unto the weaker vessel, being heirs together of the grace of life, so that your prayers be not hindered." Real simple here. This is, it's simple and easy are two different things, you understand. Your responsibilities are simply laid out, they're just not easy. Your first responsibility is to dwell with them. You're to provide them with security. I am amazed at how easy it is for women to feel insecure in this world. Men don't have that same problem, that same weight lying over them. I walk out of the store into a dark parking lot and get in the car, and my only thought is, did I leave the window open and will it rain on the seat? I don't worry about being attacked. I don't worry about my safety. I'm driving down the road and my car breaks down. I just worry about how far I have to walk. I don't have to worry about my physical safety. Not so a woman. Men don't worry about getting heavy. Some maybe should, but we don't. To men, heaviness only has to do with health and maybe not being able to move around the seat like I used to. Women worry about their looks. They worry about their weight to a degree that is ungodly. Much to a degree that's ungodly. And it's the culture that forces that, not God, not your marriage. But women have these worries. Women have a tremendous worry about, am I attractive to my husband? Is my husband going to be secure? Just heard word of somebody leaving their wife, a pastor, and I wouldn't have suspected it. I wouldn't have thought it of this person in a million years. And every time that happens, every woman thinks, what about my husband? You know, what? It's a strange world out there. It doesn't matter how big a clod or geek he is, there's some woman who'll be interested in him. And so women worry and say, what about that? This verse is saying, you're to provide your wife with that security. You're to dwell with her. She should never have a doubt in the world that you would ever leave. She should never have a doubt about your constancy and your faithfulness. You're to be just as faithful to her as God was to you, as God was to Israel. Men, if you ask what I believe, what are the grounds for divorce, I will say you can divorce your wife for anything that Christ can divorce you for. You find me the grounds for which Christ can tell you I don't love you anymore, and those are legitimate grounds for you to divorce your wife, and that's it. I think you'll have to look far and wide to find that. Your wife should have an absolute sense that he is going to be here. And that word dwell together is a very strong word. It's a word that has to do with your presence in the home. Got it, guys? You're supposed to be I know, Mike, I'm sorry, I don't mean to make you shudder, but sometimes we take jobs that send us on the road. I take a job that sends me overseas for a couple weeks a year. But you should be a very real presence in your home. When you're not there, you should be missed. At least missing you, at least it should be, let's put it this way, it's better if they miss you when you're gone. You should be someone that, there's a hole there. There's a need. There's something that cries out to be filled. You should be dwelling with your wife. Your wife shouldn't be the one who holds your home together. It should be you. And God tells the husband to dwell with the wife. Again, especially in this day and age that the Bible was written and it's held true right through to our present day, it's the women who are in fear of their husbands leaving. That was the reason in the Old Testament for the bride price. The reason why the husband put up this enormous amount of money as a purchase price, as a bride price for the wife, was to guarantee he wouldn't run off on her. In a Bedouin culture, where you'll live hundreds of miles away or from your daughter, this guy is on the road, that money he put up, which was the equivalent of several years' salary. Okay, you ladies might not really want to be purchased, but what if you knew your purchase price was $250,000? Well, that's a little better, right? If you're that man has to put up $250,000 for the right to marry you, I'll tell you something. He's going to take his responsibilities a whole lot more seriously. And the guarantee was he's not going to run off. He's not going to leave. This is an absolute here. And I cannot tell you how despicable, how horrible, and how horrifying it is for a man to do that. All kinds of sin can enter into your life. And I don't know that anybody is above any sin if they walk away from the Lord. But this is an explicit command. Dwell with them. And it says, according to knowledge. That means you have to understand them. Don't ask me how. But it means you have to give thought to them. I am absolutely amazed. We will do this sometimes. We'll sit around and say, what's your wife's favorite color? What's your wife's favorite food? What's your wife's dress size? You know, what is this? And boy, oh boy, the men, first of all, I don't know dress sizes. You know, I thought, well, she's a little smaller than me, and, you know, I'm a 35, 36, so maybe she's a 28, 29, you know. Working down, I realized that that didn't quite work, you know. It wasn't the metric system or whatever entered in there. She could certainly fit into a 28, but she'd do it several times, you know. So the question is, how thoughtful are you of your relationship? How much time have you taken to consider? Again, something this morning, it happens all the time. Men marry a woman for what she is and become disappointed when she changes. She's not the woman I married. Women marry a man for what he can be, for what the potential she sees in him, and then she becomes disappointed when he doesn't get there, when he doesn't reach that point. And it's so typical that the woman, she expects certain things and she expects to see him develop and he doesn't get there, and that disappoints her because he's still the same kid I married. Yes, that's the beauty of us. And the man turns around and says, you're not the woman I married. Yeah. How did you expect to get 8 kids? You know, it changes you just a little bit. Well, we laugh about it, but that's a serious problem. When a woman becomes a mother, her relationship to the husband changes. The amount of time that she has, her concerns change. All of and her life and the focus of her life changes. And that bothers the man. It bothers a man desperately. A man wants a woman who will attract him. Well, it's hard to be attractive when you've got your hands this deep in the suds and in the soap and in the daily work and everything that's going on. But the man doesn't think about that. His consideration only goes as far as, hey, he went through all that to marry you, and then he thought his responsibility ended. Well, the Bible says to dwell with them according to knowledge. And one of the greatest hindrances to a breakthrough in marriage is men who have stopped recognizing and thinking of their wife anew. Men who will not say, you know, I need to figure this person out again. I need to think of what they have become, of what the Lord wants me to be. Your needs as a husband and your needs as a wife will change. They're not going to be the same at every step along the way. And if you're not willing to continually be looking at that, you can't have a relationship. We do this with our children. We recognize that the needs of a teen and the needs of an infant are, well, they're somewhat similar, but they do have differences. And you can't parent a child of 25, and believe me, you parent children when they're 25 years old. You don't just stop, okay? But you can't parent a child of 25 and a child of 15 the same. If you are trying to do that, you will be an unsuccessful parent. You cannot be a husband or a wife, but I'm talking to husbands tonight, to a woman after 20 years of marriage in the same way that you were when you were first married. The love and the consideration and the tenderness and the affection and the passion are still there, but they have to be different because she's a different person. One of the things that happens in Baptist circles is we don't let women change and we don't let women grow. They enter into the home. They become home-centered. Well, what happens when the home doesn't contain the children anymore? What happens when there's a need for her to work outside the home? What happens when she gets to the age where she's saying, you know, I'm getting around 40 and I don't want to be a mother anymore. I want to be something more. Well, her husband hasn't thought about that. He's not willing in many cases to let her change just because it's all too new to him. What? You mean you want to change? You know, you want to be something more? Well, Baptists do that. Sometimes we identify submission with not finding your role in God's life, but finding out where you were supposed to be when we were first married and staying there for the rest of your life. Well, a wife's role in the home when she is newly married as opposed to when she gets children can be a new thing. Your role changes and your responsibilities change before and after you have children. When the children get to be teenagers, your role, your responsibilities change. And women start to look outside the home. You can't expect a woman to have the same kind of fulfillment in the home when she's been raising the children and doing these things. All of a sudden the children aren't there. All of a sudden she wants to look outside the home and the man is shocked. The man is appalled. The man is insecure. Well, grow up. You know, get with the program. Dwell with that woman according to understanding. Understand who she is and where she is and what her particular needs are at that time. It's a frustrating thing to be the parent of a daughter and to see what the husband does when your daughter becomes pregnant with your grandchild. And to say, do you understand her special needs now that she's pregnant? Do you understand the special roles and responsibilities that you have? And I don't imagine that any father-in-law is really completely satisfied. I'm looking at Dave now, or at Mike, as the case will be. You're not completely satisfied because you're saying, don't you understand these things? Well, maybe the question is, did you understand these things? And maybe you're not any better now at understanding the needs that your wife has than you were when you were 20. Maybe you now understand her needs at 20, but you don't understand her needs at the present. And it says, dwell with them according to understanding. Our God has a relationship to us that it says he knows our frame. He understands that we're dust. God's relationship isn't based on him reaching our standards, on us reaching his standards, on us coming to a place where now we're acceptable and we've reached some level of maturity. He knows just how weak we are. He knows what strengths we have. He gave them to us. He knows everything about us, and his relationship to us is called knowing us. God knows us. You cannot dwell as a husband without knowledge. And yet I see home after home where the man goes out and he goes to work and he'll spend more time trying to figure out how to put together a 57 Chevy than he will about what's happening in his marriage. He'll spend more time working on his career than he will spend working on his profession as being a husband. And that is a sin. And it's a sin that has tremendous impact because of what it says next. Giving honor to the wife as unto the weaker vessel. In the marriage, the woman has the weaker position. Her position in life and in the marriage is weaker than yours. And so she is at a natural disadvantage, and your failure to give her her needs will be more painful and more disastrous than her failure to give the man his needs. When a woman doesn't meet a man's needs, he turns outside the home. Men need respect. They need honor. That's an A number one need. Women need affection and love and concern. Men need that, but not as much as they need respect. They demand respect. But they can get that from many other places in the home. They can get that from work. Men can have a very fulfilling life simply at work. I think that's a lie that women are told. You can have a career and be fulfilled. That is not working. Women are finding out that careers are not fulfilling. They like them, they're helpful, they fill in some things that are missing, but women aren't fulfilled in a career. Women become fulfilled in personal relationships. But a man, he can focus and get that respect that he needs from another place. But when a woman doesn't get what she needs in the home, by the very nature of her being probably at that point a mother as well as a wife, by the nature of her Christian responsibilities, where does she go to get what she needs? Where is she going to go for affection? Where is she going to go for understanding? Where is she going to go for compassion? Where is she going to go for the needs that are down here in verses 8 and 9? She has no place to go. And I think she is in a much weaker position. She's in a weaker position because of her position in the home in submission to the husband. That she has to wait for the husband in many cases to take the lead. That puts her in a much weaker position than the man. She's in a much weaker position physically. Marriage takes its toll on a woman's body much more than it does on a man's body. She is in so many ways in our culture much more vulnerable, and it will always be that way. I don't care what you say, this new world isn't making women any more secure. Their heart attack rates are going up, their stroke rates are going up, the age that used to be that women live much longer than men. Now women's lib is closing that gap, and women are living just about as long as men. All the new freedoms that are offered to women, abortion and other things, are ending and making life cycles, the cancer rates that are tied to abortion, all of the trauma that's tied to them, these aren't setting women free. And my problem is that we just don't address the men and say, how come you cannot give honor to your wife as the weaker vessel? And I'll give you one reason that I think is the truth. It's because honoring someone as the weaker vessel is counterintuitive. Men honor strength, not weakness. Men honor a woman or an individual because they're strong and they deserve it. We're trained to do that. You get respect if you deserve respect. God honors things that are weak and vulnerable. I won't turn there, but you turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. The Bible says that the church body, God gives honor to the part of the church body that are weaker. He clothes them and covers them. Not to the part that are stronger, God honors the weaker part. The truth and the most basic truth about the Christian life is when we are weak, then we're strong. And men have to understand that they're to honor their wife for the weakness that she has allowed herself to be placed in, for the role that she has allowed herself to undertake in that home. You are to give her the honor that she deserves. And I don't think men know how to do that. Men don't really know how to honor one another. The way you honor a man is usually by not talking to him. We're out there playing softball. I kid you not, right? You're out there playing softball. Somebody takes a wicked hit with the softball. Do all the men go over and say, oh, are you okay, and pat him on the shoulder? No, what do the guys do? Hey, shake it off there. Hey, you'll wear your equipment next time. You know, hey, you'll take care of yourself. Hey, let's keep going. Why? You're treating him like a man. What do you do to your sons? Your sons come in crying and they're hurt. You know, hey, it'll be fine. That's good. Took care of it. Okay, let's go. What are you doing? You're showing honor to them by not showing affection. It doesn't work with women. That isn't the approach. Men, by that silence, that not talking about something, is giving another man his space. If there's a man in your office who's going through a terrible problem, what will you do as a man? Give him his space. Don't bug him about it. Let him handle it. That's how you show respect for him. That doesn't work with women. That's not how you give honor to women. Women are a little different than men. And after 20, 30 years of marriage, you should catch on to this fact. It should gradually accrete and seep down into the brain stem. You know, whereas you're losing your hair, there should be more ability for more things to soak through, a little less dense up there. Women need honor in a different fashion. Women need to be told things that men don't want to be told. Women need to be assured of things that a man would be embarrassed to be assured of. That is not weakness. That is difference. You have to understand, when it says she's the weaker vessel, it's not talking about the fact that you've got to treat her like a child. It's saying her position as a vessel, her in the marriage, is much weaker, and therefore you give her honor. And you're not treating her like a child. You're simply trying to understand, I trust, I have to give her honor in a different way than I want honor. Her needs are different. The things that is her due are different. I am not supposed to give her what I want. That's what I do when I give gifts. You know, the hardest thing is giving a gift to somebody, and you're giving them the kind of gift you would hate. You know, I'll buy Anita, like, a toaster oven. And she loves it. A toaster oven. You know, a mixer. Oh, great, I got a mixer for Christmas. You buy me a Christmas gift, and it better not be something I can use. It better be something like this here pencil. See, this here pencil, I got a dozen pencils in my pocket, you know, and different things that work. But this one's kind of unique, and it's fancy, and it clicks, and it's gadgety, and it's little. You buy me that, and I'm happy. You go buy me, you know, if you were to say, okay, well, I'll buy you 10 number 2 pencils and a sharpener. Don't you show up at my Christmas with that. But my tendency is, when we were first married, give this sort of thing to my wife. Don't you love this? And she would be like, oh yes, this is different. You know, this is certainly unique. How can I use it? Well, what do you mean, use it? You're not supposed to use it. You're supposed to enjoy it. Well, Anita's family, if you couldn't use it, it's not enjoyable. Well, you learn to say, I cannot give the person what I want. I have to give the person what they want. And the woman wants honor. It's interesting up above how the woman, Sarah, gave honor to her husband. One, she obeyed Abraham. That means she followed him wherever she went. The word obey is different than the word submission there. It's a very specific word. She followed him. She obeyed him in things that boggle my mind. He said, why don't you marry the Pharaoh? You know, and she said, okay. You know, suppose that had been someone like, oh, say my mother. My mother's about this tall. But when you added the implement she carried in her hands, she could be quite a bit taller. If my father had suggested that, she would have thrown something else at him. And I saw my mother toss more than a few things. Dave, she could have been on our softball team. If it was tossing household implements and not a softball, my mom was pretty good. She got my dad once with one of those blue melamine bowls about this big. And like that, they had especially when time when they're walking away from the Lord, it was real head for the dugout time, and watch the action sometimes. But if my father had, it was hard enough for him to make a regular suggestion, but if he had suggested that, forget it. Well, the only way Sarah could do that, by the way, is because it said she trusted in God, not because she trusted in Abraham. He wasn't very trustworthy. But she showed him honor that way. She called him Lord by the way she addressed him, by the way she talked to him. Well, I have a suggestion. One way you can show your wife honor is the way you talk to her. Your tone of voice, the way you address her, the way and the forms in which you address her. How often do you talk to your wife? How often do you not just express these things, but how often do you take time to say, I want to find a way to give her the honor that is her due? Baptists talk a whole lot about honoring mothers and honoring women, but don't do a whole lot about it. A flower once a year doesn't cut it. And it's, of course, as a father, socks once a year don't cut it either. Those of you who are thinking about Father's Day in this crowd, that doesn't cut it either. I got a red one, a blue one might cut it, okay? You just got to give them hints every once in a while. But the key here is, he says, you are to be giving them honor as the weaker vessel. Weakness is not something that God looks at the same way that humans look at. God looks at weakness as his ability to work. God looks at weakness as a vacuum that he's ready to fill. We look at people who are weak and say, what's wrong with you? God looks at people who are weak and says, now I can get to work. Now I can do something. Now I've got somebody who's ready to be used. And that's exactly what he's talking about. As being heirs together of the grace of life. One reason that you honor the woman is because she's the weaker vessel. But that as being also refers to giving honor, and that you honor her as well because she's a joint heir with you. She is an equal. You two are both heirs of the grace of life. Why is it that women can approach middle age and get the feeling that they're allowed to sit at the table but nobody gives them a spoon? Why is everybody else getting benefit from this family but me? How come all of the blessings that come into the home, none of them come my way? The world's answers don't work, by the way. The Oprah answers, where the woman just decides, now it's my time. I'm going to run off on my family, and I'm going to leave everything behind, and I'm going to do, you know, now it's my time to run off. Well, that isn't going to produce any more happiness than anything else. That's really going to produce a tremendous sense of guilt down the road and a tremendous sense of loss. The answer is, within the home is supposed to provide you because you're joint heirs. I don't know about you, but we're going to do our best to divide up our remaining property between the Lord and between our children. And the part that goes to our children is going to go to the best of our ability equally. We want them to be joint heirs. And if one of our children takes the inheritance from everybody else, that is cheating. That is wrong. That's despicable. You are my children, so you are equal heirs. The man's job is to guarantee that his wife is treated as an equal and that she's an equal heir of the blessings of that home and that marriage. That's a very difficult thing to do because men don't realize their advantages. Getting out of the house can be a tremendous advantage. Not being locked up with the lovable little perishers, you know, day in and day out, especially in a young home. The men don't realize that because getting out of the house is usually not enjoyable for the man. He's in that traffic, and that is absolutely miserable. He's at work where he's not treated as well as he should be treated. He's frustrated. He is just driven crazy. Then he gets back in the traffic, and you know what? He loves to be home. Home is a place of safety for him. Home is a place where I'm out of that crazy world. And his wife says, I got to get out of here. And he's like, well, are you kidding me? Do you want to go out into that? Well, yes. Yes. There is a trapping, a prison that the home becomes. And if the woman is not allowed to participate in the blessings, if she is not made an equal heir by the husband, you're cheating her. Just as much as cheating on her, you are cheating her. She is an equal receiver of the blessings. I'm amazed that it hasn't caught on to Baptists that the government considers this. You're in the military. You serve in the military for 20, 25 years. You have a retirement coming to you. Guess what? You can serve in the military for 25 years, leave the military, go out in the workforce, divorce your wife. You know what's going to happen to your retirement for those 25 years in the military? She gets half of it. Does that sound fair to you? Yes, it sounds fair to me. The government says that was both your money. That wasn't your money. You were bringing home the paycheck, but it took two of you to make a home, and that your retirement is half hers. Why should that be shocking to you? You may be the one who is engaged in the work that brings in the money, but she is the one who is engaged in other things, and it is both your money. In a home, there's usually one person who makes the decisions about spending the money. Or, in some homes, you have your areas with the money, and you have your areas with this money. But it's both your money. You are joint heirs of even the blessings of the money. It's not one person's money. It's both your money. And sometimes that proves a real problem because men in particular can use money as a weapon, as a tool, as an authority thing. I've got the money and I spend the money and you come to me if you want something. That doesn't work. It's both your money. You make out decisions how you want to make of who's going to spend it, but that is both of your money. And if you want to come to me and say, I'm the head of the home and I spend the money, I'll say, nuts. You may be the head of the home, but it's both your money, just like it's both your children. And you have to understand that. When it says heirs together of the grace of life, everything that God gives and all the good things he gives, you're joint heirs together. The other part of that is to be joint heirs, it takes both of you to inherit it. One of you can't inherit it really without the other. One of you isn't going to find the blessings that come your way without the other person. If you're married, God looked at you long before you were born and said, you're not going to be able to have what I have for you in this life without that other person. You're not going to be able to take it all in. You're not going to be able to make use of it all. You both have needs and weaknesses that the other person meets, and it takes both of you to inherit what I'll have to give to you. And when you enter into a marriage, that's the basis in which you enter in. I'm not talking about the roles that you have. The roles in a marriage are special things that operate differently in different circumstances. But as a married couple, you're equals, and I need what that other person puts in. And he says you're joint heirs. Notice what he says in verses 8 and 9. I want to tie this in. All of you be of one mind. Oh boy. That would put every marriage counselor right out of business. If that could even a smidgen of that. If the two of you could be even of two minds instead of three or four minds. Having compassion one for another. Love as brethren. Be pitiful. I've seen some pretty pitiful marriages. That means have pity, have concern, have a tenderness, have a compassion for what the other person is going through. These crazy headaches are neither here nor there. I haven't had any kidney stones since the headache started up. I don't know what it is. My left hand doesn't know what my right hand is doing. But I'll tell you something. I have no idea what it means to be weak and frail in the body. But there's going to come a time in my life when my wife and I are going to find out what it means for that other person to be weak and frail and to need you and to take care of that person. And if you haven't developed pity. Now, pity isn't the English term looking down on somebody. It's a genuine compassion for their situation, for where they are, and a desire to meet that need. The same feeling that a parent would have for a child who needs to be comforted, or a child who is cold. I don't care if I see a little child that's cold. I don't care if they're my child or not. I'm going to do something to get that child warm. I see a child who's lost in the mall. I'm going to do something. We were sitting around the other day in the mall. Not my favorite place, but I was there for an undue amount of time where all the men are gathered in the food court, you know, waiting for their wives. We're sitting there and you notice a little child on their own. Every parent in that place looks at that child and says, where's the parent? You know what can happen? You don't care if it's yours or not. You have a compassion, a pity for that child's situation. If you don't develop that for your husband or wife, you're going to be into trouble when you need that. When they get older, as going to happen to all of us, you're going to be in a situation where you're going to be a caregiver. And you're eventually going to reach a point where you can't be a caregiver anymore, where you need somebody else to do it for you. You don't have the ability. But he says, this is what you have to do. Be piteous. Be courteous to one another. Oh, being courteous. That is so hard to do because it requires thoughtfulness. And it's so hard to be thoughtful. It requires effort. It doesn't require much to be courteous. A little bit of effort, a little bit of thought. He says to be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing. Boy, that would ruin some good fights. That would just kick the legs right out of a couple good fights you've had. But completely on the contrary, blessing. I have never met a married couple who is able to do this, and I'm looking for the one. That when that person curses you, they just turn and in real earnest say, I bless you. I'm waiting for that one. Meaning it. Knowing that's what you've been called to. God called you to do what is unnatural. Marriage is not natural. He called you to do what is counterintuitive, what is unnatural, to give to that person what they don't deserve, to give to that person a blessing for everything, that you should inherit a blessing. We call them the Beatitudes, the blessings. Remember? The Beatitudes apply to marriage as much as any other part of Christianity. If you want to know what God expects out of you in marriage, go back to Matthew 5 and you read through the blessings. That's what beatitude means, the blessings. Blessed are these people, blessed are these people. That's what God called you to. You are heirs together so that your prayers be not hindered. As a born-again believer, your walk with the Lord isn't right, your walk with your wife won't be right. As a man, what kind of prayer life do you have? I really fear for evangelical churches when it's the women who are the prayers and it's the men who are the talkers. I really fear when we're seeing a generation of men who don't have a deep walk with the Lord. They're not talking with the Lord. When you talk with the Lord, that's how you exercise your own submission. That's why I call him Lord. Like Sarah called Abraham Lord? I talk to the Lord and I recognize the more I'm talking with God and exercising my submission, the more that encourages me to say, I don't want that relationship hindered. I come to church very early on a Sunday morning, and there are several reasons for that. One, I think the pastor should be the first one at the church. That's what I told Dave, that's what I tell Mark. The pastor ought to be the first one here, if at all possible. Two, I want to be alone, and I want to have a time to pray, and I want to have a time to walk with the Lord and get things ready. Three, I stick around the house, we're going to fight. Now, you probably don't fight on Sunday mornings. It's probably just a tendency that my family had. Sunday morning is not the most spiritual time in the world. Getting those kids out, getting everything done, getting this done. One of you two is always first to the car. It's not always the husband or the wife. One of you two is ready to go, and you're sitting out in the car, drumming, feeling those good, warm, inherit a blessing thoughts. The other is inside either A, working their head off because somebody's sitting in the car not helping, or B, possibly poking. Doing whatever it takes, and then you get in that car with the children and enjoy that warm family feeling as you drive to church. You know, I've learned that that's why God made two cars. As a father, the best thing I do for my wife is get out of the house early on a Sunday. I clear out of the house, and then everything seems to work. It is so easy, because if my relationship with Anita is not correct on a Sunday morning, I can't preach. It hurts. Sometimes you have to. You know, I just can't stand up in front of you. I'd be killed by my wife if I did that and said, I can't preach today because Anita and I are fighting. Doesn't work, you know. That tends to get you in a little more trouble than the other one would. But that works. You have to ask yourself, where is my marriage? Because that's where your prayer life is. As you sit here tonight, give your grade to your marriage, because that's the grade where your prayer life is. You can't have a poor relationship, a relationship as a husband, where you're not providing what your wife needs, and claim that you have a good relationship with your Heavenly Father. It doesn't work that way. And when Peter turns to men, he said, it's all about what the women are doing. Doing what doesn't come naturally. Because that's why God gave you a supernatural Holy Spirit living inside of you. Let's stand. We won't sing in closing. Let's just stand. As we're dismissed in prayer, not on the ride home, but after you get home tonight, ask your spouse about where you stand. How am I doing? Spouse, there's no need to go into great detail. There's no need. But if God wanted this passage preached today, that means he wanted this passage heard today. That means you've got to say, okay, what am I doing here? And what can I do? And where does God want me to be? Because there's a reason why Peter put this in. And we're not going to have our church coming together unless we've got our marriages coming together. Let's pray. Father, we love you. The things you give to us are just overwhelming. The pleasures, the joys of life, the fact that you've given us everything we need to receive this world and the things of it. And that includes the person you gave to us in marriage. I pray, Father, that we might be building what you give to us, that we might not abandon it, that we might not be walking away from our responsibilities as husbands, that we might not allow ourselves to be greedy and to be selfish and to be getting the blessings and not giving.